he does what he wants. He is a phenomenal musician. It's too bad that that's not the first and foremost thing that goes into becoming a star. But he understands that and accepts it. And I think he's very comfortable being who he is and where he is.
That's Bill Meredith, a freelance music writer based in Southern Florida, who has written multiple articles on Stanley Jordan. He's written for Jazz Times and Jazz Is, and he had a long-standing music column in the Palm Beach Post. When I spoke with Meredith recently, I wanted to know a little more about Stanley Jordan's place in the music world. I'm a jazz fan, and I have really enjoyed getting to know more about Jordan's music through this project. But during my interviews with Jordan, I also got to know what he means by, as Jordan puts it on his website, his, quote, chameleonic music persona of openness, imagination, versatility, and maverick daring. He's been called a genius, and he's been nominated for 4 Grammy Awards. But I also got the sense that here's someone who might not have always followed the easiest path to commercial success. So I wanted to speak with someone about Stanley Jordan's journey as an artist. That's coming up in just a moment. From the School of Engineering and Applied Science at Princeton University, this is Composers and Computers, a podcast about the amazing things that can happen when artists and engineers collaborate. I'm Aaron Nathans. Bonus episode. In addition to being a music writer, Bill Meredith is also an accomplished musician in his own right, including his work with Big Brass Bed, a Bob Dylan tribute band. I started by asking in what way Jordan is innovative, not as a computer musician, but as a performing artist.
In practically every way imaginable, he is a true artist in that he follows his muse rather than following trends. He started out with Bruce Lundvall attempting to kind of make him a crossover pop and jazz star. It was something I think he embraced to a degree at the beginning, but he knew it wasn't going to be his true calling.
And who was Bruce?
Bruce Lundvall headed up the Blue Note. He was working in the jazz department and then got another title in the more popular music department of Blue Note right as Stanley signed and was recording Magic Touch, his debut album. So that kind of led to him trying to make Stanley a crossover star through music video and other means.
How did that go? I mean, was that after Magic Touch?
No, it was actually during, and it went really well commercially at first. Stanley was nominated for 2 Grammys from that record. There was music video, and it was definitely a sign of the times. But Stanley kind of recoiled from that, I think. He's spoken to that effect. He didn't really want to be a pop star. He didn't want to be something that he didn't see himself as in the first place.
And what do you think he sees himself as?
There's a quote I found in one of the stories I wrote that I thought was really telling, and I ended a story with it. Not to be too dramatic here, but you'd rather be hated for being who you are than loved for being who you're not. Mm. I think that kind of encapsulates Stanley's mantra, and it's probably a lesson that the entire music industry should take, especially popular music, but they don't seem interested in that. It's more intriguing if it's a facade than if it's someone being truly who they are.
So what's been the cost for Stanley Jordan's career, dedication to following one's own path?
Well, I think the cost has probably been commercial, but I don't think that that's really important to him. I think he could have certainly pursued that angle, but his second album was a big U-turn from Magic Touch.
Thank you.
So that indicated that he wasn't comfortable trying to play that role. And he's gone even further afield since the sophomore record. He's pretty much doing what he wants to now, whether it's on a major label or otherwise. It doesn't seem to matter too much to him, especially since he moved to Arizona in 1995.
Can you describe what was so accessible about Magic Touch and then what marked the second record that made it so different?
Magic Touch had a lot of cover songs on it, which I think was probably a concession that he made. I don't think that's what he wanted to do. I know he did a mind-blowing cover of Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles. There were some jazz standards on there as well, but the second record was a big departure from that. I don't think there were any music videos. I think he was trying to play out the string at Blue Note, frankly, even though he respected Bruce Lundvall and all. You know, he really appreciated what Bruce did for him, but I think he was giving Bruce license to do what Bruce thought was best for Stanley, instead of what Stanley thought was best for himself.
Hmm. So what were some of these innovative things that he did over the years after Magic Touch?
Well, even Magic Touch was hugely innovative because Stanley has a tapping technique. There are other guitar players who became famous for tapping techniques. Eddie Van Halen is probably the most famous one. But he wasn't tapping with both hands as much as Stanley was. Stanley is a great piano player as well, and he looked to the guitar as an extension of the piano.
Wow.
And he even got to the point where he was playing both instruments simultaneously on certain tracks. I believe right hand on the piano, left hand on the neck of the guitar. A high degree of difficulty, and don't try this at home.
Is that just kind of a stage trick, or was there something musical about that really that he was able to kind of elevate his?
I actually think it's a combination of both. He's not the only one who's done that. There's a guy named Mike Keneally from Long Island. Who started out as an organist. He's become better known as a guitar player, but he was in Frank Zappa's final touring ensembles playing guitar, keyboards, and singing. And he does the same thing occasionally. But another guy I forgot to mention is Alan Holdsworth, who's deceased. Phenomenal jazz fusion guitar player who primarily tapped with his left hand, I think. I think he's one of the greatest guitar players ever, and I think Stanley would probably say that as well.
So does it surprise you at all that he had this past in computer music, that at Princeton he was just using boops and beeps through a computer to build innovative sounds? Does that seem consistent with Stanley Jordan's career?
I think it would surprise most people who had never spoken to him, but to me it doesn't really come as a surprise. He's pretty much musically capable of anything. And when I interviewed him, it wasn't based in the computer music he had done. We touched on it a little bit, but he said that his primary field of study at Princeton was granular synthesis, which he has used since. I believe there was at least one track on his State of Nature album, which came out around 2008, where he employed those techniques. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's done it since or if he does it in the future.
Yeah, granular synthesis was something that a lot of the computer musicians at Princeton were exploring at the time, especially in the with help from the engineering school where I work.
Stanley's very analytical, so that kind of goes with the territory.
Well, I mean, you've interviewed Stanley a few times. What really struck you about those conversations?
Just how much he was concerned with nature. That was really the first time I interviewed him was probably late 2007 for a May 2008 story in Jazz Times. And he started out talking about nature and the surroundings in Sedona, Arizona, where he'd moved, and how much he enjoyed just being able to look out the window and see snow or see foliage and be able to walk out his front door and go hiking in any direction. I think that obviously that's more his nature than living in places like Chicago or New York or even Princeton, New Jersey.
What is Stanley Jordan's place in the jazz universe?
He's an innovator. He's capable of doing things on guitar that most guitarists aren't. So his place is going to be probably more highly regarded by musicians than the general public, which is a trade-off that I'm sure he's okay with. Frankly, don't think he even cares much about what his legacy is going to be. He does what he wants. He is a phenomenal musician. It's too bad that that's not the first and foremost thing that goes into becoming a star. But he understands that and accepts it. And I think he's very comfortable being who he is and where he is, especially since he moved out west.
What are some essential Stanley Jordan recordings? If somebody's going to open up their either Spotify or go to the record store and get some old Stanley Jordan albums, can you think of anything you could recommend?
Definitely the cover of Eleanor Rigby from Magic Touch. There's another cover he did where he did a solo rendition of Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin, as only he can. And I would recommend any of his compositions. He gets better known for covers than he does for his own writing, which is unfortunate.
Don't we all?
You know, it's a sign of the times, and really has been probably since the 1980s.
Any other thoughts?
If Stanley hears this, please come back to South Florida, and preferably on more than one night, so I have options. And I love to meet him in person and love to hear him perform. I spoke to a couple other South Florida guitar players who were really, really talented, and asked them about Stanley Jordan. And one of them was a guy I used to work with named Andy Stein, and he said he saw Stanley play at a local festival called Sunfest, an annual festival in West Palm Beach, and that he was talking about the impact of Joe Pass and Herb Ellis. And the ability to play bass lines as well as melodies. And then with each hand, he played a Herb Ellis line and a Joe Pass line. And Andy said
at the same time,
his jaw dropped. Yeah. And another guy named Tom Lippincott, who plays an 8-string custom guitar. He lives in Hollywood, I believe. Complete finger picking style. And he said he just couldn't believe how good Stanley was, and listens to him all the time, and he's a major influence. So I think Stanley's probably more of an influence to other people than he realizes. If that's his legacy, I'm sure he'll be okay with that.
Bill Meredith, thank you for taking a moment to chat with us today about Stanley Jordan.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Aaron.